Hello, my name is Brenda Holt. I am the Associate State Director of Community Outreach for the Arizona State Office of AARP. And while February is officially Black History Month, AARP began the celebration with the observance of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday on January 15th and continues the celebration through February 28th. AARP strives to develop a year-round appreciation of Black history, life, and culture by spotlighting some of the great innovations and contributions African Americans have made, such as what you'll see today. We are glad you could join us in order to keep the celebration and acknowledgments moving forward, and we would also like to thank Boom Goddess Radio for the opportunity to collaborate. We hope you enjoyed today's program. Be safe and be well.
Hello and welcome to Boom Goddess Radio. I'm your host, Jennifer Davis Page, and today I have the privilege of presenting the second of a six-part series for Black History Month. This is the history of the Dunbar Springs neighborhood, the oldest neighborhood in Tucson. Our guests today are two amazing women. One is our historian, Barbara Lewis, and the current executive director of the Dunbar Pavilion, Debbie Chase Mabey. Thank you, ladies, so much for joining me, and welcome to Boom Goddess Radio.
Hello, thank you.
Hi, Jennifer.
Barbara, I would like you to start with, I know you're our historian, so why don't you start and tell us from the beginning about the Dunbar neighborhood and when it got started. Give us the whole background on it, please.
Okay, Jennifer, and I'm going to start really from the very beginning.
Okay.
So I'll get to it, and because the interest is in both Dunbar and the Dunbar Spring neighborhood, am I correct?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it starts in 1904, when Arizona was still a territory. At that time, 160 acres, which was originally Tucson's Court Street Cemetery, was plotted. And this piece of land housed a mixture of African Americans, Mexicans, Yaqui Indians, and Chinese residents. Then in 1912, statehood changed everything. It introduced mandatory school segregation, which informed African Americans that their children could attend only schools built for them. So the first school was called the Colored School, and it was in a converted undertaker slash bakery building. However, within 5 years, the African-American student population increased to such an extent that it led to the construction of the school at 300 West 2nd Street, and that's its present location. The school board, along with the African-American community there, named it the Paul Lawrence Dunbar School after the famous Negro poet at that time. Okay, and by this time, 1918, the neighborhood had become the first predominantly African-American neighborhood in Tucson. The school became this neighborhood's focal point, and the neighborhood was called the Dunbar neighborhood. It was the only school that African-American elementary and middle school students, grades 1 through 8, could attend. However, from grade 9 through 12, they attended an integrated, and I put that in quotes, Tucson High School. Dunbar was the only school that African American teachers could work. And this school was always underfunded and only had used textbooks and would have no cafeteria and no auditorium until 1948, when a new wing with 23 classrooms was added. Can you excuse me for a second?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. I'm sorry.
No, take your time.
Okay, so the end of the school segregation era came in 1951. And the school was renamed John Spring after one of the first Caucasian teachers and principal in the Tucson Unified School District, in order to erase traces of segregation. The school closed in 1978 and was abandoned. TUSD made attempts to sell it and even give it away with no takers until 1995, when the Dunbar Coalition purchased it from them with plans to turn it into an African American museum and cultural center. The neighborhood, this is where it, the neighborhood became Dunbar Spring in the 1980s, combining the former Dunbar Neighborhood Association with the John Spring Neighborhood Association. Now, if there are any other questions, you can.
When the neighborhood was originally established, what was the population? Do you remember?
You know, I really, really do not know the exact population, but the population of African Americans has always been small. And at that time, it was only probably about 2.5%.
Now, originally then, it was an entire African American community. Right? There wasn't any integration at all until,
No, originally it was an integrated community.
Oh, okay.
But a large percentage of African Americans lived there. After that mandate for a totally black school, then it became predominantly and the first African American community in Tucson, because the other people kind of moved in adjacent areas. So that's when it became, like in 1918, it became predominantly African American.
So now we had a mixture. We had a mixture of African Americans and white Americans. Now, were there any Native Americans in the area, or any Asian Americans?
The Yaqui was in the area.
Okay.
Mexican Americans were in the area.
Okay.
They still are, not the Yaqui, but Mexican Americans and Anglos are still, well, Debbie will tell you about what it has become now, but they're still on the adjacent areas of the Dunbar Spring neighborhood. And I think you asked about those boundaries.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And actually, the boundaries of this 160-acre plot is that there is it's Speedway on the north, Stone Avenue on the east, 6th Street to the south, and the Union Pacific Railroad and Main Avenue on the west.
Besides Paul Laurence Dunbar being a brilliant poet, why did you decide on the Dunbar name? What made his name the name that you wanted to honor the building with?
I think at that time, the community, they wanted to name their school after an African American. Mm-hmm. Plus, they wanted to stress education. Which Paul S. Dunbar was very educated and a brilliant poet. And he was world renowned. He wasn't just known in a small area.
Course,
and I think that's what pushed that to that point. I know I attended the school, and yes, we had to learn a lot of Paul S. Dunbar's poems.
Debbie, let me ask this question. The Dunbar Pavilion of African American Arts and Culture, what kinds of programs does the center currently offer to the community?
Well, what's unique about the Dunbar Pavilion now is that we ourselves do not really run programming. We support organizations that run programming. So we really kind of think of ourselves as if you take the metaphor of a stew pot, so, you know, you put in vegetables and all these things that make the stew, but if you don't have a pot to hold all of that in, mm-hmm. it's just a conglomeration of vegetables and seasoning. So Dunbar is really the pot that holds the stew together. So the only programming that we actually facilitate ourselves is our health and wellness program that we received a major grant from the Howery Foundation 2 years ago to seed a program that looked at reclaiming ideas of resiliency and well-being in the African-American community by looking back at what were the things that sustained us through adversity as African-American people. And those things really live in our DNA, you know, ways of knowing how our bodies work, ways of knowing what wellness is, mental health, spirituality, learning from our ancestors, what are medicinal plants that heal us. There wasn't a doctor available to us and our ancestors. So what are the ways in which we healed ourselves and others? And so the health and wellness program is part of looking back at those ways, reclaiming those ways of knowing, and then looking to the future about how we take those ways of knowing to create resiliency for ourselves moving forward. So the Dunbar Pavilion now houses organizations such as the Barbia Williams Performing Arts Theater. We have the Dunbar Barber Academy, which is the largest barber academy in the Southwest, graduates the largest number of barbers in the Southwest. We have the Tucson Hand Weavers and Spinners Guild. We have a primary school in our building. And then we also host programs like the Tucson Slide Society, AART, which is the African American Retirees of Tucson, hosts their meetings out of our space. So we provide a platform for these organizations to do their work.
So now, if I wanted to learn, or any of our listeners wanted to learn, wanted to send their son or daughter to barber school, they would just then, would they call a central number, or does the barber have his own website and his own telephone number and all for them to register or to get?
Yeah, the Barber Academy has, although we do get phone calls for our tenants and we refer them to the proper person. But if someone wanted to attend the Barber Academy, they would find the Barber Academy number. They have a website. They have a Facebook page. I believe we have their information on our website on how to contact them directly and find out about enrolling in their program.
And the same thing goes for the weavers and the quilters.
I believe all of our tenants' information sits on our website. So
I'm sorry. Go ahead, please finish.
No, they sit on our website. And if people want to directly connect with those organizations, they would go directly to those organizations. And those organizations themselves have a large following, have a large, their own constituencies that come to them directly. They all are, you know, operate as their own businesses and do their own promotion and that type of thing.
So now, how has it changed with COVID?
That's a great question. One of the biggest impacts COVID has had on our facility is that we haven't had the capacity to help people with to do weddings and birthday parties, to rent out the space as they once was. But it's also created a wonderful opportunity for us to look at how we activate other spaces, particularly our outdoor space, our garden. We're looking at transforming our garden into a meditation garden and space where people can rent that for birthday parties and weddings and come and convene in that space. Part of the health and wellness program included centering the garden because it has so many plants and materials in there. And I could talk a little bit about that when we come back from break.
Terrific. And we're going to take a short break. And please don't go away.
I may never have met you. We don't go way back. Maybe we wouldn't even be friends if we did. But when you wear a mask, you have my respect. Because your mask doesn't protect you. It protects me. I wear my mask to protect you. Mask up, America.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Boom Goddess Radio. Today we're speaking to Barbara Lewis and Debbie Chase Mabey about the Dunbar Spring neighborhoods. And when we ended our first half of our show, Debbie was talking about the beautiful garden they have at the Dunbar Pavilion. Debbie, you want to continue?
Yeah, and so what COVID has done is allowed us to really take seriously our outdoor space and how we activate our outdoor space. And that outdoor space, the garden, has been kind of the core of our health and wellness program. And, you know, as I was saying earlier, that health and wellness program was about reclaiming agency over our bodies, reclaiming our ways of knowing as Black people over our bodies, which also translates into stewardship of the land. And I don't know, Barbara, you have a little bit more information about how the Dunbar Spring neighborhood, how its trajectory of development has contributed to where we are now. And I don't know if you want to share a little bit more of that information, because it's certainly relevant to how the Dunbar operates currently.
I can and I will. I just want to say that when these two neighborhoods associations first came together, the groups that was the Dunbar neighborhood and the John Spring neighborhood associations, they came together, the groups fought against each other, and their relationship was not a good one. But since it's been 15 years and they've tried to make it cooperatively with each other. But during that 15 years now, I just wanted to say that the neighborhood has become almost completely Anglo.
Oh, okay.
And I'm just sending it back to you, Debbie, because you're around and Debbie actually lives in the neighborhood.
Yeah, I live a block from the Dunbar Pavilion. I live in the Dunbar Spring neighborhood. And the challenge of operating a very culturally specific facility like the Dunbar in a rapidly gentrifying neighborhood is that the interest of the neighborhood and the neighborhood association is not necessarily the interest and the mission and the vision of the Dunbar Pavilion. And so what we're seeing is this Black space operating in what has now become Black or white space, mm-hmm. and I won't call it and some contention over ownership of that and who has agency around that and who has the right to guide and direct the activities of a Black-owned space. And one of the part of what adds to that is neighborhood associations in Tucson have a very particular power in city government. They are put in a position to validate programs. You have to go through a neighborhood association to kind of get approval, I guess you could say, for development programs, changing in zoning. that type of thing. And so there's often contention between the Dunbar Pavilion, this Black-owned space, with the Dunbar Neighborhood Association, the Dunbar Spring Neighborhood Association, which is largely white homeowners and residents of the community. And it has shown itself to be a really interesting dilemma on how we move forward as a Black-owned organization, Black-owned, Black-led, centering Black people in a community where there's only 4% of African-Americans mm-hmm. in this community. The Dunbar represents the last remaining manifestation of Blackness in Tucson. And the threat of gentrification is a real threat to the Black history of Dunbar. Actually, the Dunbar Neighborhood Association, Dunbar Spring Neighborhood Association meets when they were meeting face-to-face, meets on the Dunbar Pavilion property. But the contention is very real and very, very present in those interactions.
And how long has this been going on? This contention between the neighbors,
the Neighborhood Association and the Dunbar Pavilion.
What would you say? The neighbors as well, I would imagine.
Since the 80s, when the two neighborhoods combined, the two neighborhood associations. Remember, there was Dunbar Neighborhood Association and John Spring. Right. And remember, Dunbar was Black school named after Paul Laurence Dunbar. They changed the name to John Spring. Then that's how we got a John Spring Neighborhood Association. And it's been contentious since then.
What do you see happening? I mean, do you see any change coming up in this 2021? Do you see any change or no? And what can you do to well, I guess this is a question for the whole country, but what can you do to change it? I mean, do you need representation from other members of the other Black members of the Tucson, not just your neighborhood, but of the Tucson community? How can it change?
That's an interesting question, and I think there is an opportunity for it to change. I think once people once the neighborhood association understands the role of guest and host, if you know what I mean, mm-hmm. and they're guests, and they have to understand what being a guest means. And Barbara and I have done presentations for the neighborhood association, and I think in that type of scenario, it's just going to take a continued relationship building. I think one of the issues is that many of the housing, some of the housing opportunities in Dunbar Spring are rentals, that the owners don't live in, you know, that there are, that people are renting their homes. And so students are living in the neighborhood that don't necessarily have a vested interest. Okay. In the neighborhood, you know, they're there for 4 years, then the landlord will rent to somebody else and rent to somebody else. So what you have on the leadership of the neighborhood association is older people who really are afraid of change. And when younger homeowners mm-hmm. start to come in and work and take leadership of the neighborhood association, you might see some of those dynamics start to change.
Are the current homeowners, the old school homeowners, are they renting to African-American families?
On my block, you know, I don't know. We have not done a housing scan or a demographic, you know, the census hasn't come out yet. So we don't know what the demographic makeup is of the neighborhood. I can tell you that on my, again, I live a block away, that there are three Black families on my block that own their homes and that have been here for a very, 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 very long time. But they also report that they get calls regularly by developers wanting to buy their home, saying, you know, we'll buy your house and move mm-hmm. you into an assisted living place. Some predatory mm-hmm. some predatory developers looking mm-hmm. to take those homes from African American homeowners, for sure.
When I moved to Tucson from Chicago in 2013, I had the privilege of meeting Rita Elliott, and she
I was going to bring her up, Jennifer.
Yes, and she was, from what I understand, she was a neighbor and an activist, and she's written, I think, a book or two. And can you tell us a little bit about Rita Elliott?
I can. What I know, I'll tell you what I know. I've known Rita. I did know Rita.
Okay.
She passed away a couple of 3 years ago.
Right.
But
right.
I knew her for a long time. We were in some organizations together. But Rita lived in the neighborhood. Rita was a part of the Dunbar Spring Neighborhood Association. And believe me, she fought for that neighborhood and fought for the African Americans in that neighborhood, because things were changing. She was a thorn in their side, I'll tell you for sure. And she was, and unfortunately, this is the thing, Rita was the only African American that was regularly at the Dunbar Spring meetings. And this was years ago, until, you know, up until her decease. She was the only one. And we need almost all of our African American population to support us, to stand up for us, to own it, and to keep that legacy. That's all. And I believe Rita was one of those who would do that.
Well, now that you're getting the word out, are African American leaders coming together to help in all of this? Or it's not working out as well as you would like it to?
Debbie?
That's a really good question. I don't have a real direct answer to that, in that I think the African American community is so so disjointed and pocketed, I guess you could say, in many ways in Tucson. And when you speak of African American leadership, I'm not quite sure who you're referring to. If you mean, Urban League or NAACP or IMA, they are certainly friends of the Dunbar and certainly support the idea that the Dunbar should and will be the beacon of cultural convening, a hub for cultural activity. And as we continue to work with one another, I think the more that we communicate with one another, the more that support will show up, for sure.
Well, I would like you to, we've got about a minute left, so I would like you to give your web address and your email address, any information that you'd like to give to our listeners. Someone may certainly want to reach out to you and see if there's anything that they can do to assist. But if you'd be kind enough to give us your web address and your email address, if you'd like to do that, so they can reach out to you.
Yeah, our web address is thedunbartucson.org, www.thedunbartucson.org. And I can be emailed at debbie@thedunbartucson.org.
The Dunbar telephone number
okay.
is area code 520-791-7795.
We also have Facebook and Instagram, so be sure to friend us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram.
Ladies, I can't thank you enough for sharing your story of the Dunbar Springs neighborhood and the Dunbar Pavilion with our listeners today. And I so appreciate it. And as soon as I can, I'm coming down there.
Excellent.
Come on.
Thank you. Thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in to Boom Goddess Radio. And we will see you next time.